Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Neutral Game, your newbie-friendly fighting game podcast. I'm your host, Mirdrug, aka Real Soviet Bear, and with me is Six, aka Six.
Hello, I am both Six and Six.
And today, we decided to dive in a bit into the latest expansion, or season, or whatever you want to really call it, of BlazBlue Crosstag Battle, officially titled BlazBlue Crosstag Battle 2.0. And I'm going to be honest, I did not expect there to be something like another season for this. I thought it was going to be a one-off thing, but here we are.
Yeah, I have been surprised when the game initially came out. Like, at release, the director was doing interviews where he was complaining about how Arxis didn't give his project any budget and clearly didn't give a shit about it. And so it seemed like, you know, from the horse's mouth, like, okay, this is going to go out and they're going to, you know, do what they promised to do, release the characters they promised, and then that would be that. But yeah, that is not how it's gone.
I wonder how much the Switch version has to do with that, or, like, whether on PC it also took off, because, like, they know their sales for, you know, Guilty Gear, BlazBlue, and a lot of games. They know which numbers to expect, and it doesn't sound like they got what they were expecting. It sounds like they got more.
Yeah, I guess that must be the case. I know for my part, I've recommended the game to a number of people because I thought it was a really good game, and also just hit a style of fighting game that I feel like we don't get much. Like, it's this sweet spot for me between, you know, your big, like, Marvel vs. Capcom style tag games and then one-on-ones, but we already did an episode about the base game, so I don't need to go on about that again.
Yeah, I also want to add, like, maybe Evo had a lot to do with it, because we did mention that on the Samurai Showdown episode that they did get another season confirmed, and that was also an Evo game, so hey, maybe being main stage Evo has even more to do than we thought.
Mm-hmm. Though it's weird, because I feel like, I mean, Evo this year was great for the game, but Evo last year, I don't think was, and they would have had to have started this before this year's Evo, because, you know, they had the announcement ready. Last year's Evo was, you know, Team Scythe everywhere, and honestly wasn't that hype to me.
Yeah, I'm honestly interested to see what the numbers are, even, like, broken down by region. But we're probably never going to see that, or if we see that, it's going to be years after the fact. But we got another season, we should be happy about that. And
yeah,
not only did they add new characters for existing franchises, they added two new franchises.
Yeah, I was going to say no one saw Akatsuki Blitzkampf coming. It's weird because I'm on a call with the one person who did see it coming.
Yeah, I totally called it.
But beyond that, I don't know that anyone did. So they added Akatsuki and Blitz Tank from Akatsuki Blitzkampf. Akatsuki, the main character, a Japanese hero who has the Blitz motor installed so that he can fight fascism. And then gets frozen and unthawed, you know, a regular Captain America. And then Blitz Tank, the tank with a skull on it, that is the main villain of that game.
Well, it's the main MacGuffin, but it's a playable MacGuffin, from what I understand.
Oh, fair enough. I'll be honest, my Akatsuki Blitzkampf lore is a little shaky.
I haven't played the game, but from what I know, the big baddies are, like, Bison-style war general leaders. They're really bad, and the Blitz Tank is kind of like this thing. Stuff revolves around, but also it's playable.
Yeah, so I feel like the picks here, I mean, Akatsuki is a natural pick. Once you accept that they have chosen the game, Akatsuki is a natural pick because, you know, he's in Unial and Unist and, you know, Unclear coming up. And well-liked in that. He has a pretty good representation in that game, so he has that recognition. Also, he's the main character. And then Blitz Tank feels like the other breakout character from that game, just as a meme, because it's like, oh shit, you can play as a tank. But also, it's a game about Nazis, and, I mean, Blitz Tank, therefore, is also sort of a Nazi, but it's just a tank, right? Like, it's easier to put that in your game than a dude in a Nazi uniform.
Probably. I'm just, like, very... Well, so Akatsuki makes sense because, in a way, I feel it's a cop-out because they can essentially go, oh, look, Undernight has a guest character, and they have sprites for that character. What if we took that character, which is essentially from Undernight in the Undernight version, but then we can say it's another franchise, right?
Right.
So in that way, like, it makes sense. The Blitz tank, I think it was a damned if you do and damned if you don't thing. Like, if you include Akatsuki, everybody's gonna complain if there's no Blitz tank, and if you add the Blitz tank, everybody's gonna complain that there's a Blitz tank.
I don't know that anyone's complaining. Maybe you've seen some stuff. Everyone I've seen is, like, baffled but excited.
Yeah. But yeah, they did rework the Blitz tank sprites quite a bit, though, because the original Akatsuki is a doujin fighter, and it's not really that high fidelity.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, I don't know why this only just now occurred to me, but if they added Akatsuki because he's in Unial, are they going to add Eltnum?
Maybe. I mean, that would also be like an easy Multi-Blood cop-out and just say, oh, we have a character from Multi-Blood, and they just happen to add her because it's, you know, less work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I feel like at this point, given the shape of their thing, like, they have a, like, originally they had their icon, which was, like, you know, the four, like, fates in, like, a little, you know, square, a little diamond. And then as they've added fates, they've sort of added as extra squares. And at this point, they have sort of two interlocking. And you couldn't just add one more. It would screw up the symmetry of it, so you'd have to add two more.
I mean, you can make symmetry and just make a center one, which is the new one you're advertising.
That's true.
But yeah, I also want to add, like, out of the two franchises, and we're going to move to the next one, out of the two franchises, Akatsuki Blitzkampf is the only one with two characters, ergo, like, reinforcing my idea of they just picked it because they already had Akatsuki. So if they added, like, say, Melty Blood, they would probably add a Melty Blood character and Eltnum. That would be my guess.
I think that would be the way to do it. But also, maybe they just do Eltnum because... Well, yeah, no, that makes sense, because they had to do less work on Akatsuki so they could do Blitz Tank. And so, yeah. And then with the other franchise we're going to talk about, they had to create that from scratch. So I assume that's part of why they only did one.
And also keep in mind that the Arcana Heart Sprite is also from scratch. From what I've seen.
Mm. Yeah, I guess that's true, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's not the... It doesn't look like the Nitro Blasters version. So I'm guessing they did it, like... They used the base.
Or the Arcana Heart 6 stars.
Yeah, that one was too low res to be that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Didn't think about that. But the other fate that has crossed with us is very near and dear to your heart.
Well, Niren, I'd say I have practical experience with it, I'm not sure how often there are people who just play one Senran Kagura game, like, to completion, because I feel you're either all in on the franchise or you just don't play it. But hey, research and all that stuff. So I did play Senran Kagura, and I did play, Senran Kagura Estival Versus, which is the specific one that's guest starring. Which is really weird, because that one's, I don't think, the latest, and it's also a spinoff, but whatever. And they added Yumi, who is a ice-based shinobi lady who dresses kind of like the Mai Shiranui school of shinobi style.
Mm-hmm. From other people's comments, I've been led to believe that's the first game where Yumi appears, and that's why it's that one.
Oh, is it? Okay, it could make sense then.
But yeah, it's interesting because, so Akatsuki plays like Akatsuki, right? His Bitatsu isn't as good. And Blitz Tank is a whole thing. It's, you know, if you think about how would a tank play, it's actually pretty accurate. I was really surprised at how Yumi plays, because she's this, like, she has a surprisingly big move list of, like, variable, like, Rekkas and projectiles and combos, and I think she's actually pretty interesting mechanically speaking.
She continues the tradition of fully original characters feeling like they should be in a one-on-one fighting game with the amount of stuff they have and the mechanics they have.
Yeah, it does seem like it's one of the things that makes me love Arxis, is it's like, you know, if there's, they will respect whatever, like, the existing move list of characters, they'll modify them a little bit here and there, but when they get a chance to be like, oh, this character hasn't been in a fighting game before, they will kind of go hog wild.
Yeah, and you can see, I think with almost all Ruby characters, like, they are, some of them are a bit more complex than others. Like, I think Blake has quite a lot of different moves, mm-hmm. but a lot of them feel like their game plan isn't super tag oriented, it's more like 1v1 oriented, and it just makes you want them in a traditional fighting game, whereas all the characters who are from traditional fighting games have had their moves like halved so they could actually function as tag characters and not, you know, fully fledged solo characters.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting you should mention that in regards to Ruby, because we also had a new Ruby character, Neapolitan, who is a villain from Ruby, and I think she's super fun. Oh, she is definitely my favorite character addition, and one of my favorite characters in the game now.
She's pretty fun. Do you want to explain how she works? Who she is?
So she's, yeah, so in the show, she is a, it's, I think basically what they've said is she's not actually mute, she just doesn't speak, and we haven't really gotten into that, but she is a non-vocal lady who uses an umbrella with a sword in it, though she basically just uses the umbrella, she almost never uses the sword. And then she creates like clones of herself, like illusions. And the way she uses them in the game ends up being very much like
Hibiki.
Yes, Hibiki Kohaku, there it is. So he plays like BlazBlue's Hibiki. She plays like BlazBlue's Hibiki, where she like does moves that summon clones, and based on inputs she can make them either fake or real. Like either the clone is the one that got sent out, or the clone is what she left behind. And she has, like, moves where she, like, does, a taunt, and depending on what button you press, it's either, like, either she will teleport if you don't hit her, or she'll teleport if you do hit her. She has a lot of good mind games, and just really great range on her normals. I don't know, she just plays a really, really fun, like, mid-range, like, normals and you know, fake-out games that I think is really fun.
Yeah. Yep, she seemed pretty fun. Again, I had like the issue with her where her kit kind of makes me want to focus on her instead of like tagging in and out, so I couldn't really fully wrap my head around her. But she seemed pretty good. Like, it's making me all want like just a Ruby Arc System Works fighting game.
Yeah, that would be good. I would definitely enjoy that. Though I think I guess that probably won't happen just because of the effort of creating all that many sprites, you know? Like, even now, we only have 5 Ruby characters, and the level of quality on those sprites, like, clearly it is a pain in the ass to make them.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to make sprite fighters these days.
Yeah, but you have, like, 5 characters, and I'd say, like, for a small digital fighting game, like, 10 to 12 characters is what you'd expect, right?
That's true. They're close enough. They could probably pull it off.
I mean, they're not going to be like usually when you make sprites for games, you make them with the idea that you'll be using them for an extended period of time, generally when you make assets for any game, you don't want to make them and throw them away because it's ridiculous, which is why SNK, you know, has KOF sprites look the same across a span of like 5 entries, mm-hmm. and same with like, you know, BlazBlue. Mm-hmm. So I'd be surprised if the Ruby stuff is, like, a one-and-done with BB Tag.
That's a fair point. We also get a bunch of characters from the core franchises, like BlazBlue, Unist, and Persona. So from BlazBlue, we get Celica and Susanoo. I'm going to editorialize a bit here. So tell me what you think about this. I don't know anyone in the world who was clamoring for Celica.
You are probably correct, but Celica plays better in BB Tag than she does in the actual BlazBlue game. Because her healing is actually good now without being broken.
Yeah, no, that's true. She does come together in a way that, like, playing her in BlazBlue, she's just so clunky and weird. But she flows much better in BlazBlue.
To just, like, explain to people, in BlazBlue, she slowly heals herself with moves. And I believe some moves, like, give her temporary health, like a la Street Fighter Focus, which she can replenish with other moves. The thing we mentioned probably in previous episodes, healing in fighting games is a very weird way to do. Like, sometimes it works with Ragna because it's part of a regular move, but straight up, this move heals me usually is either very powerful or very weak. And that was true with Celica, I think. Like, her healing wasn't that good in BlazBlue. Mm-hmm. But in this one, what they do is they have her healing recover red health without her being tagged out. And that, I think, makes it actually work really well because it's a mechanic that already exists in the game. She just accelerates it in an interesting way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, like, she has, like, a game plan, which is, like, if she gets openings, she can heal herself and therefore stay in the fight without tagging out longer. Like, she has a clear purpose for that mechanic.
Yeah.
Susanoo is kind of fucking ridiculous in this game.
I mean, like, actually playable because there's no gimmicks.
Also, just, like, I mean, I don't know if you've messed with Susanoo at all, but, like, just disgusting damage. Like, I have played, you know, I've played, like, various characters. You know, I played, like, Linnea for months. Day one was Susanoo just in the lab. I did a combo that did 80%, and that's more than I've ever done with any other character. He's just ridiculous.
Yeah. But he hates all his tag partners, so, you know, do you wanna sacrifice that for damage?
It is the case where everyone except for Ruby, he's just like, you're the fucking worst and I will kill you as soon as I'm done with them.
No, please. He just says he will kill everybody. The only person he says you are the worst is, I believe, a Neapolitan, because I guess he just hates illusionists very, very much.
Yeah, he doesn't seem very fond of them. Yeah. But yeah, with Ruby, she has a great bit of dialogue where she is... So her classic thing, of course, is that she loves, like, cool equipment. And so, like, you know, she admires Ragna's weapon and stuff, and she's like, oh, that's a really awesome set of armor, can I try it on? And Susanoo's like, oh, you would deign to wear the power of a god if you can handle it very well. It's like, okay, this is great.
Yeah. But yeah, I wish they simplified Naoto as much as Susanoo, or rather just remove his stupid dash, but here we are. Yeah. Some people get stuff, some people don't. I got the Blitz tank. I should stop complaining, I guess.
I mean, I played a little bit of Naoto in story mode, and I'm sure I wasn't optimal, but he didn't feel that bad to me.
Oh, no. He is infinitely easier than he used to be, but they still kept the micro dashes if you want to play him, like, properly.
Yeah, it ain't great.
I don't know why. I don't even know why that's still a thing. I don't know why that was a thing in the original, but whatever. I complain about that a million times. There's also Unus. They added a character.
Mm-hmm. They added the final boss of Unus, Hilda. So now you have multiple options if you want to run a team like full screen normals.
I mean, I don't know much about Hilda, and I haven't fought that many Hildas in Undernight. But if the story mode is anything to go by, she's a pretty good villain.
She's all right. You know, she's very much like the delighting in the chaos, you know, condescending evil lady. But, like, it's fun. Her voice performance is really enjoyable, and it's you know,
she strikes like a very nice balance between corporate and chaotic, I'd say.
Yeah, I can see that. And I do think her toolkit is enjoyable enough. In this game, it makes a little more sense to me, because a lot of times that's what this game will do, is by simplifying the moveset, you kind of get to the core of it faster. When I played her in Unist, I was having trouble understanding what I was supposed to do, but in BB Tag, it's not hard to understand at all.
Yeah, it really is with the BB Tag cast.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this franchise feels like it's kind of gotten the backseat lately. At least that's the perception I'm getting. Especially like with the story mode, but we did have two Persona characters, Elizabeth and Adachi.
So Elizabeth has always been a really interesting character, and it is they had to make some changes to her to implement her here. Like one of the cores of her game plan in Persona 4 Arena was Hamon and Mudon, which were two supers she could do that were delayed activation. Like, she'd cast them and one of them's on the ground, one of them's in the air, but they take like 10 seconds or something to turn on, but if you get hit by them you just die. And obviously that's a little busted for a tag game where it's really easy to lock people down. So in this, they just do, you know, really good damage if you manage to lock people down.
Mm-hmm.
She's still like her implementation is still really interesting, because they gave her the awakening mechanic from Persona, where like when you go below like 30% health, you gain more meter and you gain access to additional moves, and your moves gain new properties. But for some reason, you don't get your own version of the music, your own song that just plays over and erases the soundtrack. It seems like a mistake to me.
Yeah.
but I don't know. She seems really complicated, but she's a really cool addition to the cast, I think.
And what do you think about the deadbeat cop?
Adachi was really weird in Persona 4 Arena. Ultimax, obviously, was the one he was in. He had some neat mechanics, but he had a lot of like moves that didn't make sense. And I feel like they've done a better job of making his toolkit make sense, but then there are ways in which things that didn't carry over speak volumes. Like, he's got a gun that he never shoots.
Yeah, I was like doing down forward moves, and I just never see him shoot the gun. I'm like, wait, he has a gun. Naruto has a gun. Shouldn't this be working, you know, similarly?
Yeah, well, because even in Ultimax, the one way he could use it is he could shoot the ground, you know, like kind of like Blake's little quick draw move.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was a worthless move. So, like, you know, they're kind of shackled to the sprites that they've got, but it's just a weird, like, visually, it doesn't feel like he necessarily comes together. He's got a good feel overall, I think. He's really good at, like, his moves are, like, spaced and paced in such a way where he makes you think there's an opening and then quickly punishes you for it, and I think that dynamic works really well, but... beyond that, I don't know. He still feels a little strange.
I mean, the biggest addition for me for with Adachi is that it makes me more interested in actually maybe playing Persona 4, because I'm not super into the character designs of Persona 4. And playing the story modes and seeing the characters how they look, he's kind of been the closest to, oh, this might actually be an interesting character. I'm kind of curious what his deal is.
His deal is a whole thing. he has probably the most going on by the point of Ultimax of any Persona character, because that guy has an arc.
I've imagined as much, and the story mode, like, I don't know if this is an Ultimax thing or an actual Persona thing, but he seems like he's useless, but then in the story mode, he seems like he's super powerful, and I'm just very confused at what his deal is. So
yeah, I mean, if you want, we could talk off air. I don't want to spoil Persona for anyone.
No, but, you shouldn't spoil it for me. I'll probably get around to actually trying to play it.
But yeah, he's like, there's a great, we'll talk about the story mode later, but there's a really great exchange the first time he appears in the story mode, where Blood Boy Naruto is like, he's you know, fighting Azrael with with Adachi, and then he's like, oh shit, and this is never gonna end, and Adachi's like, just get out of here, I'm fucking whatever, I'll take care of this. And now it's just like, can I trust you? And Adachi's like, what, no, don't be an idiot.
No, I think he specifically says, kid, you can't trust anyone.
Yeah, like, Adachi, speaking more generally, is extremely a character who has a lot to say about millennials. It's great.
How, okay, this isn't a spoiler, but how old is he? Because I can't tell. He has, like, a kid's face, and in persona, gray hair doesn't mean anything.
He's, mid-20s.
Okay. He looks so much more tired.
Yes. That is important for you to note that.
Anyway, before we go, but yeah, I'm glad he's in. I've always liked his lines and his voice actor and just this look, so maybe this will push me over the edge and make me actually play Persona 4.
You're going in the fucking TV.
So that, I know about that spoiler because of some stupid YouTube video, but yes, I will, I'm looking forward to it.
We also had some balance changes to the game. The characters with the most health didn't get any health buffs, but everybody else got buffed up a little bit, a little more health to everybody. I think an accommodation for some of the system changes we're going to talk about. And then almost every character got some buffs, but the weird thing is, like, looking at them, doesn't really feel to me like it was a response to what the meta was before 2.0 came out. Like as you noted, Persona characters have seemed to get the short end of the stick. Like, nobody's really playing them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't, like, there isn't especially more buffs for Persona characters. They, like, one of the only characters they nerfed overall instead of buffed was Merkava, who was not a big problem. Gordo and Ruby got buffs, even though, you know, they're top tier. So it's a little confusing, but overall it was one of those, like, you know, rising tide raises all ships kind of approaches.
I guess it's, like, very different to balance a tag team game, because you really only see issues if a character is self-sufficient, but I think in a lot of cases, like, despite characters, like, as alone being super powerful, you'd have situations where, you know, okay, Ruby's powerful on her own, but what really makes her powerful is when people pair her up with somebody like Gordo or something else. But mm-hmm. you can't really go too much into nerfing one character, because then you nerf other pairings. And I guess, like, if you know in, like, Dragon Ball FighterZ, how everybody had Vegeta for the, or Vegeta for the assist.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of, like, imagine that on, how can I say this? Imagine basically that you have so many combinations and permutations between all characters and all their moves that it is very hard to nerf one specific thing or one specific character, because they kind of are meant to complement each other. So I can kind of see why they didn't go too much into nerfing anyone in particular. And kind of just gave overall buffs, like survivability and stuff like that.
Yeah, and whenever I see, like, buffs or, you know, like, nerfs to characters that I don't understand, I think a lot about actually when Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 came out, and Seth Killian was the community manager, and there were nerfs to Jill Valentine, who was not a strong character. And people are like, wait, why'd you nerf Jill? And Seth, who's always been, like, a really great, like, at being open with the community, was like, yeah, we did some internal testing and we found some tech for Jill that you haven't found yet that made her unbelievably busted.
Yeah, yeah. And that's also, like, also probably another thing to keep in mind. They might have found some stuff internally, or just found responses internally that the community hasn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whenever I'm puzzled, I'm like, well, you know, they have this thing where they made the game. Sometimes that means they have better perspective on what's possible.
Well, so we'll also keep in mind that if you have a dedicated QA team, that's people who spend, you know, around, like, 5 hours a day at least, like, just playing your game and trying to break it over your knee and get paid for it.
Sure, sure. But the core, I think, of 2.0 beyond new characters and stuff, is the system additions that they've made.
Yeah, I'd definitely say that the system changes are a direct response to how people have been playing the game, and I think they are very good for most part.
Mm-hmm.
So we can start with the first one, which is the cross trade, where if you do the smart combo, which for those who don't know is the auto combo button where you just press A, and everybody has a different length of the string. And if you do that and press an extra time at the end of the smart combo, your partner will automatically tag in, and you'll spend, you know, partner gauge or cross gauge, whatever they call it.
Mm-hmm. But they'll also go into that powered up state, which a couple of things here use the powered up state, and it's a thing that in the like base version of BB tag only occurred if you did an active tag, which is where you call an assist and then switch to them during the assist. It was like a mechanic that barely existed, and it seems like they really want to push it more as something you do here.
Oh, the active tag, like when you control two characters at the same time?
No, if you call someone in to do an assist move and then hit the tag button, mm-hmm, to switch to them while they're out doing the assist move, they get like an aura.
Yeah.
And that gives them extra damage on their moves and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not, like, too into this one, but I guess they saw that, like you said, people weren't using tagging it out in that way enough. So, you know, another venue for people who just keep pressing buttons to, you know, actually be able to play the game. Although it did catch me off guard when they started, where I was like, wait, why is my character just tagging in all of a sudden? Did I bind my buttons wrong?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of wish it was on, like, the B auto combo or something. The fact that it's on the A, which is, like, you know, the more used auto combo, means that if you're playing someone who isn't, you know, like, really proficient at their combos and stuff, there's just non-stop tagging in a way that gets a little tedious.
Yeah.
So I think I like it overall. I just wish it had been implemented a little differently.
Yeah. Another thing they've added is they add the extra assault, which is when you do a clash assault, which is the neutral C button, where your other partner jumps in and then you both just wail at the opponent. And originally, how the mechanic works, and still does, is once you launch the opponent in the air at the end of the animation, you press a button, and depending on how you timed that button press, you'll do a different amount of damage. Like, it goes from good, excellent to marvelous. But what the extra assault does is if you press C, you spend 1 meter and you just do max damage. I think, like, maybe even more than marvelous. I'm not sure.
Yeah, you do actually significantly more damage, and then also, again, the powered up state for the character that initiated it.
So I think this one is fine because I saw people very often just miss the marvelous timing, like in regular matches, and like even when I'm playing, it's very hard to nail it down sometimes in the heat of combat. Mm-hmm. So I can kind of see this as a fair trade of, okay, well, like, you just do max or more than max damage, but it's gonna cost a meter, and I think that's fair.
And also, this is a game where you gain meter pretty rapidly, so
an extra
you know, like, meter dump is a good thing to have, I think.
Yeah, and speaking of gaining meter, they've added rampage time, which thankfully is nothing like Danger Time from Guilty Gear. Instead, if the timer is at 80 seconds left, everybody will get increased meter gain, and then the lower the timer, the higher the meter gain is. Mm-hmm. So I'm guessing this was meant to combat stalemates. Like, I don't know how often stalemates actually happened.
Yeah, there was definitely a problem, like, less at, like, higher levels, but for average players, and also at the beginning of BB Tag's life, there's a big problem with timeouts.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, no, fuck that.
Yeah.
End the match.
Yeah. And I think some characters will definitely benefit more from this than others. Especially if you have, like, EX projectiles or projectile supers, you'll probably appreciate this more than some other characters. But, hey, I guess then you just have to kill somebody faster, which isn't hard in this game. Hard.
Yeah, no, at this point in the game's life, unless someone's defense is fucking incredible, I don't really see anyone get, like, I don't even see rampage time, pretty much, because people just die.
Yeah, I don't know when I've seen that timer, like, last time go back to 80.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest and my favorite change is the delayed entry. Thank God they've added this. So when your character or current active character dies, how it used to work is after a certain amount of time, your backup character will automatically swap in with an attack. The problem was people learned the timing and essentially just baited the character, so your character jumps in and then they're just destroyed, that there's nothing they can do. So they've added a delayed entry where you can hold down A, B, or C to delay up to 1 second when your character will actually fly in.
Mm-hmm. And so the delayed entry, always the entries were always like invincible and you did like a hit, but if you were up against a character who had any kind of setup ability, then they could basically get you blocking the second you got in. That was the problem.
Yep. No, it was pretty difficult, and I'm not glad they added that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are all the overall, like, general changes we've covered. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the bulk of the meta responses wasn't system wide changes, and I'm pretty sure they were kind of like terrified or careful about how to balance individual characters and not to go too overboard, because that can get out of hand more easily, and I kind of feel these outer changes make more of an impact anyway.
Mm-hmm. I think overall, like, the intention feels like they're trying to lean more into, you know, like, the things that made this game unique. Like, they want to make it more about, like, actively switching your partners. They want you to do things to set up a powered up state, and they want you throwing out a bunch of supers. And they also don't want anyone to be able to do like incoming setups, because they think that sucks.
So I have a question for you now, and we're gonna cross the podcast episodes a bit now, which is justified. So when it comes to 1v1 fighting games, so Arc System Works has Team Blue and Team Red. Team Red does Guilty Gear, Team Blue does Blaze Blue. Mm-hmm. When it comes to 1v1, I think Team Red has a much firmer grasp on how to, like, balance the game.
That is bullshit!
Nope. I'm firmly in belief, after playing both Blaze Blue and Guilty Gear, I think they're, like, Guilty Gear does a better job at balancing stuff.
Yeah, no, that's probably true. I just wanted to do the joke.
Oh, okay.
This is the spell of the game.
Yeah, I get it. Also, like, you mained Terror Meek. Don't tell me you like Blaze Blue Balance.
That's true. Poor Terror Meek.
But I don't play enough Dragon Ball Fighters, and Dragon Ball Fighters is Team Red's tag team game, and this is Team Blue's tag team game. So you played both more than me. Who do you think does a better job at, like, responding to, I guess, like, the meta and just, like, making changes in the game? Like, what gives you more confidence, or what makes you think, who do you think has a better feel for it?
So, this is a complicated one, because there's an extra hiccup to this, which is that, so the publisher for Dragon Ball is Bandai Namco, and they won't let them patch the game.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
Yeah, in the interest of, like, having a stable competitive scene, they're like, no, you get to balance patch every, like, 7 or 8 months. Oh. And in between, you just gotta watch. And that's a terrible decision. That's what's led to, you know, like, GT Goku being the fucking worst. So, like, judging by the games they have put out, I would say that Team Blue is better at it, but Team Red is so handicapped where, like, they'll put out characters and I'll be like, oh, this character's broken. Too bad we're not allowed to change it.
That sounds like
that. I feel like it's not fair.
That sounds, is Tekken and Soul Calibur patched that way? Like, every X months is when they do balance patches?
Well, they do balance patches, I believe, every time they release a character.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fairly traditional. Like, GT Goku was released in May. We've had several characters released since then. Three characters, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. No balance changes. They're not allowed to.
That is so weird to me.
Yeah, I find it a really bad decision on Bandai Namco's part. But, you know, I guess there's a lot about Dragon Ball that I feel like they're mismanaging. But, so yeah, I guess my answer is judging by the results, Team Blue, but it feels like the situation is unfair to Red.
Mm-hmm. I guess like if we were to like disregard like the patches and stuff like that, because it was both teams' first foray into tag style fighting, mm-hmm. Which do you like prefer, or which do you prefer kind of like at the start?
When the games both launched, yeah. I think that Dragon Ball was in a better balanced state.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it seems to me like BB Tag has gotten a better, like as they release characters, they're honing in on it. Like characters aren't coming in ridiculous. They're like, okay, we're understanding better and better what this game needs as we go. And I feel like Dragon Ball has had the opposite arc.
See, one thing I am very impressed by with BB Tag is that they managed to release, like, four characters at the same time without things breaking.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Like usually one character release is risky enough, but just doing, like, four or five parallel releases gets really difficult.
And it's not like they take over the meta, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, oh, like, you know, BB Tag 2.0 came out and now anyone's playing... Now, all anyone's playing is, like, Susanoo and Blitz Tank. That didn't happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really appreciate the way that they've kind of dialed in on what the game needs. And, yeah, as I say, with... It reminds me of... Like, Dragon Ball reminds me of League of Legends. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, a new character comes out and they are the meta for, you know, X number of months because they're just ridiculous. And then a new character comes out and they're more ridiculous. And it's like, okay.
I mean, that kind of makes sense in universe with Dragon Ball, though.
Yes, but who cares? Like, this is a fighting game. If you wanted to just make it like power levels, then like, okay, make Beerus the strongest character and then fuck everybody else.
No. So they're making power levels, but it's based on how later you're released.
Okay, I guess I can kind of see. Well, then why is Janemba so shitty?
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what's happening, but I didn't know about the patching thing. Okay, well, I just wanted, like, before we move on to the story mode, which is the last thing we want to cover, I just wanted to ask, which team are you playing in BB Tag?
I am playing Neapolitan on point with Yang in the back.
Okay, well... I'm playing Akatsuki and Naoto currently, which is I'm 40% of this decision was because they have a unique intro.
Mine was lucky.
Oh, okay.
I was just like, oh, I love the way Neo plays, and then it's like, oh right, there was that fight in the show where Neo almost killed Yang, so of course they have an intro.
I think everybody in Ruby has an intro with each other.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small enough cast, you might as well.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, move on to the story mode, which is... Last time we talked about the story mode in BB Tag, I said that I find it better than the story mode in actual Blaze Blue. And I
was offended, as I recall.
Were you offended?
If I wasn't, if I didn't express it, then I was holding back, because how dare you?
Okay. Well, I'm just going to say that episode 2 has an even better story mode in my mind.
Episode 2, I'll actually agree with you.
Yeah, because the overall... I mean, they reset the plot in a way. It's just kind of like, oh, it's everybody's stuck in the same world, take 2, I guess. But I think the writing is funnier, and I think the scenes are funnier. And I also think that they did make a good decision of having non-fighting segments. Like actually put effort into those non-fighting segments rather than just watching a wall of text. It actually has new art, a lot of accompanying sound effects, and like I said, actual good writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was one of the big notes I had, was that, like, in the original story, it was like, you know, there'd be some fun writing, but every single time, any encounter led up to a two-on-two tag battle, mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, sure, it's a fighting game, but it really adds a lot that there are numerous instances here where that's not what happens, where it's like, oh, here's the two, and they're paired off, and they have to do a three-legged race? Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I just, like the three-legged race happens, and I don't want to spoil it, but when the enemy, quote-unquote, team, when the race started, the move the enemy team did, I laughed my ass off. Because it made so much sense in-universe, and you can see that the writers are aware of all the Blaze Blue memes that have existed for the past decade.
Yeah, yeah, the awareness of the writing is really good, and there's some great stuff. I had a really good again, I don't want to spoil too much, but like I will sort of spoil one sequence, which is that Blood Boy Naoto is walking through the forest, and then he like hears a voice from up above, and he looks up, and there's Rachel hanging from a tree, and she's just being, you know, her usual super condescending self, and he's like, "What are you doing?" And she's like, "Well, isn't it obvious? I'm trapped." He's like, "How did you manage to say that condescendingly?" And she's like, "I'm sorry, I'm just condescending all the time. I can't turn it off."
No, there are pretty good lines, and they made sure that each of the new characters had a bit of a moment as well, so I'm pretty happy mm-hmm. about that. And also characters that were added post-release that weren't new with 2.0 but weren't in the original story mode, they also added them.
It's weird, there must have been some kind of conflict of some sorts with scheduling, because Yuzuriha, at least in Japanese, isn't voiced. They use her combat lines where she's, you know, she's just going like, "Hey, hey," at the start of every line or something. Mm-hmm. But everyone else is voiced. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, they only get characters from certain franchises. But then it's like, no, Seth is fully voiced. And like, weird.
Wait, did you watch it in Japanese or English?
Japanese.
Oh, okay. I did the English, and the English voice acting is like spot on. It's really good. I'm actually very... I usually play Blaze Blue in Japanese, but I made an effort for BB Tag to just have everything in English, and I've been pretty happy with the results. Everybody put in a lot of good work.
Hmm. Yeah, with Yuzuriha's voice actor absent, but other than that, Japanese is very good as well.
Yeah, it was probably a scheduling conflict then, because she's like voiced quite nicely. So my favorite, I'm not gonna spoil it, but my favorite sequence was definitely the one with the barrel.
Yeah, it's a very good sequence.
But yeah, essentially how it's paced is, like we said, the original is a bunch of characters from different franchises meet up, there's a conflict or miscommunication or whatever, and then System, which is the host of everything, the big robotic voice, says, "Oh, okay, there's four of you, so two-on-two tag battle, go." And every time there was a fight, whereas here, sometimes it's a fight, and sometimes it's just a very long narrative sequence, but without it dragging on. Well, I think they're, like, paced quite nicely.
Yeah, like you mentioned, like, how the writers are clearly aware of, like, community memes and stuff. I was really, like, I had to take a walk. I was not prepared for them to be like, "Hey, Nine and Jubei, that's weird, right?" Like,
oh,
okay.
Oh, that. Yeah. Yeah, that entire part with that was weird.
It was a lot.
It was a lot to take in, yes. When is this, like, supposed to be set, Blaze Blue-wise? Like, this is before Central Fiction. Like, characters don't know about each other or some stuff like that.
Right. It's before Central Fiction. It is obviously after the initial campaign of BB Tag. I think it must be after Chrono Phantasma?
Yeah. Like
it... No, or it could... It's either after Chrono Phantasma or after Continuum Shift Extend, because the computer system has been taken over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we have Izayoi and stuff like that. Or maybe they just pull characters from different timelines because, you know, Ragna doesn't have a clue who the fuck Naoto is. But then again, it seems like the story mode and the like pre-combat battle scenes for regular gameplay have their own narratives. Because some of the reactions aren't really consistent. Then again, it's BlazBlue. Maybe everything is canon, like, because there's time loops, and maybe everything actually happened.
You can't escape from Crossing Fate, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's that essay is everything. Would you like to add anything else before we wrap this up?
I mean, just I feel like the game's in a better shape than I feel like it's ever been. And I'm really happy. I think it has a bright future. I hope that this isn't the last, like, I hope they're not just done with it now, because it would be a real shame for them to, like, get it to the point where I'm willing to say I think it's the best fighting game of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously it wasn't released in 2019, but, like, edition wise it is the best. It would be a real bummer if after that they were done, so I hope we got some more on the way.
Yeah, I'd say that as someone who didn't play it since a few months after release, and, like, until recently when 2.0 came out, I'd say it's very intimidating, unless, like if you play against people who have played, obviously, a lot. But, like, if you're okay at fighting games, I think you can get pretty decent within, like, a day. Like, I played it one evening, and I managed to still get wins in against people with several thousand wins on their profile. So, it's not impossible, it's just very intense and requires a lot of focus.
Because, yeah, it's not hard to do big damage in this game. It's more, you know, you gotta know your characters, you gotta know the matchups, and you gotta feel the rhythm. I don't know, I needed a third point, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine, we're just gonna wrap this up. Six, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at SixDetmar, SixDetmar. I've got a pinned tweet, tells you everything that I do. I will specifically shout out ScanlineMedia.com and Patreon.com/ScanlineMedia.
And you can find me on twitter.com/mdkii, that's mdk roman numerals 2, and you can also follow me on twitch.tv/realsovietbear, and also just search me on YouTube for Real Soviet Bear, and you will find me doing a little mini series of Master System games retrospectives, so tune in for that. But yeah,
and I'll edit this out if you want me to, but should I put this up on Christmas? Should I say Merry Christmas to folks?
I mean, look, you say Merry Christmas, I'll say Happy Halloween, and then it doesn't matter when we put it up.
All right.
So Happy Halloween, everybody.
Valentine's Day.
No, that's too corporate.
Okay, sorry.
Just say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Peace out.